Hi, my name's Dustin Atwood. I've been a master certified technician for 15 plus years. I've been a technician for over 20 here in the Southwest Missouri area and Northwestern Arkansas. So worked on a lot of cars. I'm from the Joplin area, so I'm a local from, you know, Southwest Missouri. I did spend some time growing up in the southern part of Michigan and the northern part of Indiana. I definitely remember and was at least part of the car game. My dad worked for several dealerships throughout my life. And if I wasn't at school, a lot of times I was visiting at the dealer, or at some point he got into auto glass and I traveled with him doing that quite a bit. I was kind of his free labor, if you will. That definitely helped me quite a bit as far as understanding what I wanted to do when I, you know, got into a professional field, as well as learned a lot of skills that either folks haven't learned or you have to go to school or learn it by the school of hard knocks. So a lot of experience, worked on thousands of cars at this point in time, small repairs, big repairs. And I've talked about this before. I kind of go through the comment section quite often. I do my best to interact with you guys. I love the fact that you guys feel like, you know, giving me a little bit of your time, commenting on the videos, liking, subscribing on the channel. Definitely helps me out a bunch. I try and keep it very real with you guys. A couple of friends of the channel have sent us some things. I don't, you know, request that by any means, but I think it's super cool when you guys do. It's very humbling. As you can see over my shoulder here, we finally got the on-air light fired up. That was from a dear friend, not only of the channel, but a personal friend of mine for many, many years. We also have some video filming tools that you'll be seeing pop up on the channel that a good friend of the channel and a great customer to A1 Custom Car Care sent to hopefully allow me to do maybe some hands-free stuff. So you'll be seeing those videos come out. But this particular comment is what I wanted to talk about and cut a video on today. I'm going to paraphrase here. I believe I understand the question well. But from a customer's point of view, when is it time to give up on a vehicle? You know, basically that, hey, the repairs are at a point to decide to, you know, give up on it, whether you sell it private party as a disabled vehicle. Typically, people don't sell, you know, good, reliable vehicles. I mean, it does happen, but you're going to pay a premium on that. In my opinion, this question comes more from, you know, the vehicle's got problems. It's not really doing what they need. There's a significant investment that needs to happen in it. You know, when do we finally throw in the towel, move on to another vehicle versus continuing to maintain and, you know, either do maintenance or, in this case, I believe the question revolves around, hey, there's a big repair. Do I dive into making a large investment and potentially, you know, maybe throwing good money after bad? And I think this is a great question. So again, if I don't have the questions, I have plenty of material that I can talk about from the shops. However, I really like to talk about what you guys want to hear about. I like this question. It really varies quite a bit, and it did specify from the customer's point of view. So like when I'm going to give up on a vehicle, probably going to be different than when somebody else is going to give up on a vehicle, because really the investment is a little bit different. And I'll get into that in a little bit. So we've got a couple of kids that drive. They, you know, have gotten through college, or I'm sorry, gotten through high school, gotten through college on their first vehicle that we essentially kind of, you know, helped them get into. And they made a comment the other day, basically, you know, how long are you going to keep driving it? Because I won't say they're beaters, but we sure didn't go out and buy them brand new cars and, you know, get them in debt or get us in debt or just write a check. We got them vehicles that I could repair that needed some work that somebody else had given up on. And I repaired them. And one of the comments was, well, I'm going to drive it until I can't anymore. And I kind of chuckled and I said, you could be driving this vehicle for a very long time. I'm extremely good at making sure and keeping them on the road. But that's not really, I guess, reality for everybody out there. And I'll clarify that, so just bear with me for a minute. Part of the question is going to be the generation when the vehicle was made and whether parts are available for it to keep being repaired. And unfortunately, as of 2025, they are really putting the squeeze to everybody as far as quality of parts or even parts availability. So as a company, we are having to really look far and wide, if you will. And I'm not talking about eBay and Amazon buying counterfeit parts off of there, because that's a whole nother show or podcast that we could do a show on. But I'm just talking being able to get parts in general. Right now, 10 years old and newer, it's mandated that the manufacturer has to supply parts for those vehicles. We're even seeing holes in that, which is actually for you to be able to sell your vehicle in the United States as a new manufacturer. That's the window that they expect or hold the manufacturer accountable, and we're seeing problems there. Now, I like new vehicles, don't get me wrong, but since about 2012 to 2015 to present, there has been a huge technology shift in those vehicles, and you've seen the price of those vehicles just rocket, even in the used market. And a big part of that, I don't know about any of you, but your insurance is typically continue to ratchet up as well, because repairing those vehicles, it's not what it used to be. When I first got in the business, you could fix a lot of a vehicle for $300 to $500. And unfortunately, and it's not like I keep all the money. I keep a very small percentage. And I'm not saying boo-hoo, we don't make any money. We've been in business a long time. In order for us to continue to be able to service your vehicles here in the Springfield Republic and Northwest Arkansas area, we still need to keep the lights on and make some profit. So it's not like I'm talking like we ain't doing okay. We're doing all right, but we stay very competitive. Most of that, majority of that money goes to acquire good quality automotive parts in order to make sure that I can stand behind it for typically the next 3 years or 36,000 miles. That's our standard warranty. We have things that are above and below that, but that's the standard. I'd say that's over 80% of the repairs that we do are covered. And I tell the customers, you know, for the next 3 years or 36,000 miles, whatever this part is, I own it. Because if it breaks, I'm the guy taking care of it. So that has made the climate change quite a bit. And we've had to get very aggressive, which we have. I have a relationship with parts vendors that you as the general public can't buy parts from. And it's not because I want to, you know, do whatever. It's that a lot of these big box, they used to say discount parts stores here in the Southwest Missouri area, and there's quite a few of them. I can't use their parts to service your cars anymore because they're absolute trash and garbage. You can look at some of the other videos, and the reason that I can say that without experimenting on your vehicles is because I do choose, because I'm in a controlled environment for my personal vehicles, to install some aftermarket parts and figure out, okay, this is a part or a line or a manufacturer that is A1 Custom can believe in. I'm not beta testing it on your vehicles. I'm doing it on either my fleet, vehicles that I'm rehabbing, personal vehicles that we're in control of. I can teach my kids how to drive in this one. I can use this one as a loaner. That's a really a big difference A1 Custom has versus whatever a lot of other shops are. They're like, oh, all of a sudden we have this crazy warranty rate on this particular manufacturer. Typically, I've aired that out before it ever comes to the shop. And then we either, you know, send out emails or we have meetings, or I'm in all of the shops, maybe not weekly, but I'm very busy, I guess. So that's constantly being updated and communicating because I still live and breathe the automotive repair side of things. I just don't learn on your vehicles, which, you know, there's other industries out there that are practicing this or practicing that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we're held to a different standard. Are we perfect? No. Do I have warranties? Yes. But I am laser focused on whether that's a good repair or not. And I realize I'm bird walking around on the topic of the video today. So thank you for kind of bearing with me on that. Sometimes I get kind of passionate about things. And failed parts or quality is at the top of my list. If we get burned a few times, I'm going to accept a little bit of that. But very quickly, I'm going to pivot the entire company in a different direction, and we do that quite often. So the question was, when do we give up on a vehicle? I'll be honest, right now, from about the late 90s, 96 was a really big area of the industry that changed as far as the technology. So in my opinion, 95 and older is what I would consider classic or restoration work. And again, my dad was in the auto body business. A big portion of that was at the dealership as a child, but a portion of it as well was at a restoration shop in LaPorte, Indiana, is where he worked at that particular shop. So I've been affiliated or understand the difference of restoration versus repair. A1 Custom is in the repair business. So 96 on up to that 2012 to 2015, depending on manufacturer, some of them were still building really good vehicles by then, and then some of them had really started dip and decline, but yet still their prices of those vehicles were going sky high. So what I'm doing for my personal side of it, or if I'm advising a friend, family, or customer, you know, hey, what's a good vehicle to buy? And I would love to say, and maybe with some of the things going on in the world, I can say this again at some point, but as of right now, the stuff that they're building is disposable pretty much across the board. We had an older child that needed to transfer from their first car into a little bit more of a car they could travel in. She likes to go to a lot of concerts. Pardon me. She likes to travel, you know, 4, 6, 8 hours away. She's an adult now. But when we were looking for a car for her, I pretty much pushed her into a Honda or a Toyota. Are there some American-made vehicles out there that would fit car-wise that are okay? Yes. Unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of recalls from Hyundai and Kia. The Ford line with the open cylinder head deck design is blowing head gaskets like crazy. General Motors, anything under a half ton, I'm seeing a lot of issues, and we're doing a lot of service. And if you have any of those cars, I'm not trying to pick on you guys. I literally was at a restaurant last night, and the waiter, I was in uniform, I was doing a safety meeting. The waiter and I got to talking before the class started, and he's like, hey, what do you think about, and I think it was like a 2020 Nissan Altima or Maxima, something of that variant. And he said, is it a good car? And I said, well, that's a loaded question at this point. Nissan's had terrible issues with their transmission. A lot of that is due to lack of maintenance. I was at a transmission class a couple of years back, and I was asking specifically about some of the CVT transmissions. And they kind of laughed, you know. I'm like, hey, you know, what do you guys recommend maintenance on it? And it was a transmission rebuilder is who I was at. And this is really what's kind of pushed me personally and us as a company more into the transmission side of the world than we had before, because I can't find one that I can depend on and refer people to. I see the way they conduct business. I can at least give you a good college try to A, figure out what's going on with your car and give you a good high-end repair, versus every time you go to a transmission rebuilder out there, they just sell you a transmission. I fix a lot of transmissions without having to just sell you a whole unit. And it really got to frustrating me that that's how that world has been. And if you are a good transmission shop out there, don't get your panties in a wad. I know there are good shops out there. I'm not lumping everybody together. But in my experience, the lack of confidence, I couldn't continue referring people that had come to me as an expert in the automotive field, because every time they went over there, they called me and, you know, hey, needs transmission. I can put transmissions in as good, if not better, than the next guy. But if I can fix it, why not fix it? I'm tired of the throwaway mentality. But I digress. I'm all over the place on this topic today. So if you're still watching the video, thank you for hanging out with me. Give me a like, give me a subscribe, give me some feedback. My point of that whole deal is late model from 15 on up, we're seeing lots and lots of high-end services really across the board. And the biggest thing that I think that is, even going back to the waiter I was talking to, and my advice to him, and this isn't just because I want to do your maintenance. If you're good at doing your own maintenance or you've got a shop that does it, keep doing it. But my advice to the waiter was, you have got to pay attention to your fluid levels. You've got to check them just because it's a new or newer car, low miles, 60,000, whatever. I don't care if there's 10,000 miles on that car or less. You've got to be checking your fluids. You got to be topping them off with the right fluids, and you've got to be making sure you're performing all your maintenance. To kind of shift very briefly into the transmission world, I told you, I put my money where my mouth is. I'm not a big CVT guy, but that's where the industry is going. I've serviced them. I've had training on them. And when I say I is A1 Custom Car Care. I've had training on them, and I have recently purchased a vehicle. Apparently, you're going to get to hang out with me in the dark. The light in this room is motion sensitive, and it's kind of over here. So a little mood lighting for you. But I recently bought a vehicle that it's an 08 Jeep Compass. And you might wonder why I stammered and had to think about that. I have a lot of personal vehicles that I'm constantly beta testing. And I'm actually teaching my son to drive in this Jeep Compass. He's going to take his driver's permit probably sometime later this month. I'm sorry, driver's test. He has his driver's permit. But it has a CVT transmission. And there's some other videos. You can look at it. I believe if you would actually service some of these fluids in these different systems, everybody understands oil changes. And yet I still see cars come in 2, 3, 4, 5 quarts low on oil. That's not acceptable. I still see cars come in that they have never had a transmission service, fluid exchange, filter exchange, whatever the case may be. And the later the model, the transmission, the more important this is. And I truly believe the reason people don't maintenance their vehicles more than they, you know, did on previous models is because they could get away with neglecting their vehicle in previous years, and they get 200,000-300,000 miles out of a transmission. I literally have a video here on the channel where a late model, and I mean late model, 6L80E didn't make it to 100,000 miles. On those transmissions, I really recommend at this point, through the training and the experience in the bays that I've had, those should get a fluid and filter change, if not a full fluid exchange, depending on how you use it, 25,000 miles for normal, non-towing, non-severe use, and 15,000 miles if you're towing with it. And that includes you out there towing your boats and towing your campers with a half-ton pickup. That is not for my benefit, to be honest. Do I love bathing in burnt, nasty transmission fluid? No, I actually don't. That's one of the fluids I despise to, you know, get on me, smell, go home smelling like. But it will significantly increase the life of not only a standard normal transmission, but your CVT transmissions as well. So I am continuously going through this. And that's what I believe allows me to drive the vehicles that I do for so long. Now, to kind of bring it back around to when to give up on the vehicle. A, if there is a safety-related item that cannot be repaired. Now, that's not as big of a deal if you're kind of further south. You know, Missouri and Arkansas are kind of like the buffer states from the north to the south. We really don't know which one we are. It kind of depends on who you talk to. We don't deal with a ton of rust. Now, with the introduction of so many people moving across the country, I'm starting to see some very rusted vehicles in this area that I never saw before. And then with some of the big buyers and sellers of cars online, and I'm not picking on Carvana, but Carvana is one, and I've actually done business. We sold a vehicle to them. They were really good to work with. If you've had experience, I would love to know your experience with Carvana or a like their website, buy and sell vehicles. But we're seeing cars that are very rusted being shipped in. They look really nice. I actually worked on a Toyota Tundra this week, 87,000 miles. Looked great on the outside. It was down in Northwest Arkansas. And you raise it up, and I had to have a serious discussion. They just bought this vehicle. I don't know who they bought it from. I don't know whether it was online or local, but it had come from New York. And that was a significant longevity difference of how long this vehicle is going to be worth fixing and repairing for this customer. So that's a big question that needs to be checked as far as whether you're going to fix it or not. If the frame's rotted in half, and you might think I'm being dramatic, I've had that happen and seen it many times, and any of my northern mechanics, technicians, whatever you want to call us, you guys deal with that on a regular basis. I've got a tech that actually moved from New York State, and he said it's normal to just be able to poke your finger through the frame of vehicles that they're servicing and putting back out on the road, and people are driving them. I mean, you get in a wreck and that thing folds up like a beer can, that ain't going to be good for the occupants of that vehicle, but I digress. So that's one that's like a no. The second one, there is what I consider disposable vehicles and then vehicles that are worth repowering. So I'll give you a couple of examples. And if I touch a nerve and you own one of these cars, I'm not trying to hate on you. I'm a professional technician. I'm just keeping it real with you guys. There were some inherent bad vehicles built, and they were very low cost. And I'm going to date myself a little bit. If you have a K car or K car variant, many of you probably don't even know what a K car was. But that was an economy car or a very base model car or cheap car, if you will, that Lee Iacocca, when he was running Daimler Chrysler, really kind of pulled them out of the brink of bankruptcy. He had pitched and had been employed by Ford previously, but he had pitched the minivan to Ford. They didn't like it. So when he went over to Chrysler, I don't know about you, but every grandma and grandpa I knew had a Chrysler minivan of some variant, and they made bucks. Not only did he do that, but he put and got the Cummins, the famous Cummins engine, put into their Dodge pickups, which, man, that really pulled them out and put them back in front of Ford and Chevy, in my opinion. But the K car was not a longevity car. If you got 100,000 miles out of it, you probably did pretty good, but it didn't cost you a whole lot. So you're not going to put engines and transmissions in those cars and keep driving them for hundreds and hundreds of thousands, as well as part availability is not going to have longevity as other cars. So an equivalent car during that line that I could think would be, or during that era, that would be a really good vehicle, not a disposable one, would be the Dodge Cummins first gen, second gen, whatever you want to call it, just to stay in that genre. Man, those people loved those vehicles, and they kept them and still keep them on the road to this day for decades. You look at Ford's platform, the Ford Escort back then. That would have been a good equivalent. But you look at, say, a Mustang of that vintage or that era, there's still a lot of those Fox body and early generation Mustangs that people still love and fix to this day. That's not a disposable car, and it's not priced accordingly. So, you know, we could go into Chevrolet, and I'm just kind of picking some. We could do the others as well. You look at the early Kias. When Kia came to the United States, they were not super great cars. So you're not going to invest in those, even if the cosmetic rolling chassis is in really good shape, interior is good. If you had a major failure engine transmission, typically those cars went to the junkyard and they, you know, were never seen again. We had a Pontiac Sunbird in here earlier this year. I haven't seen nor worked on one of those in probably 10 to 15 years. So kind of a case-by-case basis. I buy a lot of vehicles that people have given up on. I don't buy those vehicles, but I buy vehicles that I can repower, that the interior, exterior, and safety-related items. Like if I can get a truck out of Texas or an SUV out of Texas, significant difference even here in Missouri. Now, here in around Springfield, I really don't have an issue with rusting or anything like that. They're still great vehicles. But I do buy and travel to buy trucks out of St. Louis, Kansas City, and way into Kansas, because typically I can buy some of those trucks cheaper. but I got to be real careful with the rust and corrosion on those vehicles because it's not the same as it is from Springfield south. Even in Oklahoma, still pretty good. But Arkansas, Texas, that's really where I want to be buying most of my trucks from because it makes a significant difference on the longevity and the difficulty of repairs and some of the problems that I would see otherwise. So that's a really big one as well. The other part of it is if I can find a truck or an SUV, I won't say I don't buy a lot of cars. I just don't. Most of the commuters here in the United States, they want either a truck or SUV. That's why the car market has shrunk down to what it is. So a lot of what I'm buying are things that, you know, potentially have been somewhat or well taken care of that had a catastrophic failure and the previous owner gave up on. Pardon me. I've also noticed that trim package makes a difference, at least to me, of what I want to buy. And I'm not picking on people that buy base model, LT, XLT, stuff like that. But I've noticed if you get into a little bit higher trim package, typically the rest of the vehicle is in much better shape and I can fix whatever the major problem is without having to do a full rebuild on it. And I'll give you a couple examples on that. So years ago, I bought a XL F-150 six-cylinder, five-speed, four-wheel drive rubber floor mat. I looked for that specific package for a couple of years before I found one. Now, once I found it, I gave the guy what he wanted for it, and he must have felt bad because he immediately, and I think he wanted $1,600 for it. It wasn't running quite right. I didn't haggle him. I knew it had some issues. He gave me $100 back immediately. And I was like, huh, never had that happen before. And later, I kind of understood that he had really neglected this truck. And when the engine started to misfire on it, he had had it at a shop. I actually bought it in the parking lot of a shop in Mount Vernon. And apparently, they couldn't fix it or he didn't want to pay him to fix it, one or the other. So I got the engine running right. That was tune-up related. That was pretty easy, honestly. I was pretty happy with that one. But I ended up putting a full front end under it as far as suspension. The front axle was fine, but brakes, calipers, rotors, hoses, the whole deal, ball joints, tie rod ends. So I did all that. Then I put a clutch in it because the clutch was just on its way out. Then I'm on my way to work when I was living in Marionville. And I get almost to Billings, and it starts really howling in the rear end. I was like, huh, wonder how bad, you know, hopefully I can get to work. I ended up having to pull over because the carrier gear, or sorry, carrier bearings on each side that keep the ring gear centered, the one that was away from where the ring and pinion mesh, the bearing had finally left the chat. And it allowed the ring gear to slide away from the pinion gear. And so it's just like skipping and banging. So that rear differential was gone. I jumped out. I think it's either a 10 or 12 millimeter 12 point. I pull the rear drive shaft. I lock it in full of drive. And I ease my way all the way the rest of the way into Springfield. So I bought a upgraded, went from a 10 bolt to a 12 bolt rear end. Fixed all that. All new brakes on the rear. Since then, I've put lifters in that truck, water pumps, tune-ups multiple times. But I've owned that truck, or my mom drives that truck now, for better than 15 years probably. Nobody else is probably going to put that much money in that truck. However, if you kind of count out the math of even what I've put in it or what my mom's put in it at this point, I have the data to back it up. We're still money ahead on that truck. Versus buying and making a payment, even, you know, the average I think is somewhere around $700 to $800, $770. If you look at making a 707, say 500, let's pull it back a little bit, making a 500 a month payment on that truck for 15 years, or say 7 years average life expectancy, but then you're going to start having repairs on that one, the increased property tax that you have to pay, the increased insurance. Even if I was paying retail, I would venture to say on all those repairs, we're probably still money ahead. But but that wasn't a disposable vehicle. So I wouldn't have done that same expense or investment in a lesser vehicle. But buying a lower trim package, I basically had to rebuild most of the systems on that truck and keep it going. But it's given us 15 years of very loyal service. I've driven that truck to St. Louis several times for training. It's hauled and towed an amazing amount of stuff for a six-cylinder pickup. And it's still going to be on the road, you know, locally. We try not to take it too far now, but I wouldn't mind driving it a couple hours and probably be just fine with it. But once I figured that out and I started buying Lariat trim package or Silverado, I don't do a lot of Silverado stuff. I have a Duramax, but I bought it off a dealer. It is an XL, but it's a 2016 model, so a lot newer. My experience with that is if you buy a little bit of a higher trim package as a used vehicle, yes, it costs you a little bit more, but the care most of the time is significantly better, or the maintenance has been done, that usually I can fix whatever the major breakage or whatever, just, you know, transmission, transfer case, rear end, engine, etc. As well as I look at the tires on the vehicle, because as the vehicle starts in the customer's mind or the owner's mind at this point to be on its way out, they start to neglect multiple things until something major happens. So I buy vehicles non-operational all the time. And so when that happens, you have the main problem to get it back running, and then you got to work all the dang bugs out of it. And that's what you as a consumer buy quite often, is a vehicle that has all these other problems. You know, your expectation is it's one thing it needs to get it back driving again. And maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But then you find out the brakes are bad, the tires are bad, the front end's loose, the transmission slips, the rear end makes noise, the AC doesn't work. But if it's got fairly good tires on it, it's a little bit better trim package, more than not, you're going to have to do a bunch less to that vehicle to make it what it needs to be reliable and keep you on the road and not break the bank, even if you're paying a professional shop to redo it. Let me give you a couple brief examples, and we're a little over 30 minutes, but I think this is worth it. So if you're still with me, thank you for hanging out. I'm trying to save you some heartache and in turn some money out of your pocket. So I was buying the cheapest vehicles when I kind of first started, you know, dabbling in the buying and recon and et cetera. And what I noticed is I'm spending more in it than I could have just bought an equivalent vehicle ready to go. So, you know, school of hard knocks sometimes. I ended up starting to buy Lariat. I buy a lot of Fords, but I've done this with Denalis, etc. I like Denalis. I like GM. Dodge, we can talk about that. But when I would buy Lariat trim package or above, I would have much less go wrong with it, less to put money in it, and typically I could resell it a lot easier, and it was a better quality truck. So I started doing that. Then my wife was looking or was interested in getting a different vehicle, and I found her a Honda Element. And I don't know if there's any Element fans out there, but I'm a big Element fan. They're a little snug for me, but they make a really good vehicle. And I've owned, I think, three different ones, two lower trim package ones, and then there's, I think they're higher trim packages, either an EX or an LX. The difference in those is the bottom plastic portion will be painted to match. It'll be color match. So I got an opportunity to get a good deal on one of those. Had brand new tires on it. It was the upper trim package with the sunroof, automatic transmission, etc. Thing has been a beast. We've driven it to Florida. We've driven it all over. It did have problems. I believe it had new tires on it because the previous owner took it to a shop for a vibration. They thought it was tires, put tires on it, didn't fix the vibration, so they sold the vehicle. I bought it, figured out that it's a U-joint in the rear drive shaft, and that's pretty much all I did other than maintenance to that vehicle. You can't service those drive shaft or U-joints. Ordered a new drive shaft, put it in there, and we basically drove that vehicle, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years, and I've actually sold it to my sister. She's still driving the thing. So to answer the question, what makes or breaks it? A, if it's a disposable vehicle, maintenance it to the best of your ability, and that's more than just oil changes, and get as many miles out of it as possible, and then I would not make an investment as far as like $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. It just doesn't make sense. Do we do a lot of repowers here at A1 Custom Car Care? Yes. I won't say we specialize in it, but I do a bunch of them, because if I can get you another 10 years, 15 years out of a vehicle you own versus making those payments, I can fix a lot on your car and save you money versus $770 on average for car payments, insurance, taxes. So I personally, I can do transmissions, I can do engines, I can do all that stuff, and I do it all the time. I personally would maintain it to where I don't have to do that. I got other things I'd like to be doing. So if there's a safety-related item, I would absolutely, and we have with customers, say, hey, this vehicle is not fixable or not worth fixing. Other than that, a lot of people think, well, that repair is worth more than, or costs more than what the vehicle's worth. I don't really subscribe to that mindset, not just because I can fix my own vehicles, but because I understand what replacement cost of a similar or like vehicle is going to be. That's where I believe in the repower. So if you've got an SUV, a truck, or a good quality, high-level car or van, I know we got some van people out there that just love their vans. That's totally fine too. I absolutely would make a large investment, $10,000+ in those as a customer, not as a mechanic, because I know the math is going to come out in my favor if I've taken care of the rest of the vehicle. The suspension's not falling apart. The brakes aren't falling apart. The tires are good. You know, it's kind of like eating an elephant one bite at a time. If you've taken care of the car, it's probably worth keeping on the road, and your return on investment is going to come back to you very quickly, and the car will still be worth something to trade in. I've talked about this a lot on the channel. I sold two diesels here in the last few years that were my primary transportation. I sold an 03 one-ton dually, two-wheel drive, four-door Duramax. Thing was awesome. I wanted a four-wheel drive, and I wanted something a little newer. It had no bells and whistles, manual windows, manual locks, rubber floor mat. The only option that it had was air conditioning. That was it. It had power steering. I don't consider that an option. That's pretty much standard at this point. I drove it for many years. It had 370,000 miles or something. It's been towing trailers to auctions. I see it quite often still. I got top dollar out of that because I had taken excellent care of that vehicle, and it showed. I sold my Excursion with 440 on it, 470, something like that. I think it was 440. It had a 7.3 turbo diesel in it, and it was four-wheel drive. I had a guy drive all the way from, I think, Oklahoma City, and drove it all the way home, no problem. So not only did I have those vehicles, but they weren't trash when I wanted to get out from under. Did I make some large investments in those two? Sure. I put injectors in the Duramax, and I did a bunch of work to the 7.3 Power Stroke when I got it. But after I did that, several years, I don't know that I did anything else to it. I put a set of tires on it and some custom wheels, and we enjoyed that vehicle immensely. If there's any Excursion owners out there, don't be mean and don't sell your Excursion, but I'd love to hear about yours. We're about 40 minutes, so this is a little bit longer than our normal podcast. To wrap this up in a neat little package, if it's a disposable vehicle, get as many miles out of it as possible without a major repair, and enjoy it. If it is a vehicle worth repairing that is not disposable, more of an airframe style from the aviation world, maintain it as much as possible, and I would do repowers on it. And I've done several over the last 20 years, and I still see them driving around and getting many, many years and hundreds of thousands of miles after a repower was done. So I'm going to invest in it. But I'm going to maintain it within an inch of its life to the best of my ability, not to break the bank, but to save me those large repairs. And I can absolutely tell you, I can see the people that don't, and I can see how much more pleasant the ownership is of the people that do. And the last thing is if it's a safety-related item that is unrepairable. I know there's people that will weld on frames, whatever. That's a glaring example. If you had like a special one-off engine that or transmission that no parts are available, you may not have a choice in that. But I hope I answered the question. If I created more questions than I answered, please let me know down in the comments. I try and share this with you every Monday. So happy Monday if you're watching on Monday. And if not, you're the rerun crowd. Thank you for hanging out with me. I know this was a little longer than normal, but we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.